I'd like to welcome everyone who came out tonight. As you know, this is a opportunity for community feedback and a response to the preliminary recommendations that have been presented to the California Coastal Commission concerning review of the San Luis Obispo County Local Coastal Program, or their LCP. My name is Charles Lester. I'm the district manager for the Santa Cruz District in of the agency, and we cover Santa Cruz County, Monterey County, and San Luis Obispo County. Also with me tonight is Liz Fuchs, who is a manager from the San Francisco headquarters office, and Tanya Pollack, who is a staff analyst in the San Francisco office, and Steve Monowitz, who many of you probably know. He handles a lot of the San Luis Obispo County planning and permitting issues for the Santa Cruz office. I'd also like to mention that some county staff are here tonight and are available for questions if we need to go to them on certain issues. Before I pass it over to the Agricultural Commission, I would like to just mention a couple things before we get started with the actual public comment period, which is, these are preliminary recommendations. What we took to the commission at the February hearing was a set of preliminary ideas and thoughts on how to improve implementation of the county's local coastal program. And I wanted to emphasize that we see these meetings as the beginning of a dialogue about those preliminary recommendations, and the continuation of that dialogue hopefully will happen over the next couple of months. We've been meeting with different groups. We had a couple meetings already this week, and we're having another meeting tomorrow night in the Estero area. So there's lots of dialogue going on, and these are preliminary recommendations precisely for the opportunity to get community feedback and figure out what works, what doesn't, and how those recommendations might be better focused or improved in order to achieve goals under the Coastal Act and the county's program. A good example of that is the county will also be bringing forward their review of the recommendations to the Board of Supervisors on May 1st. So there will be another opportunity for the public to comment directly to the board at the county level on these recommendations. The goal that we have right now is to come back to the Coastal Commission in June or July with a set of final recommendations. And depending on how that process goes, we'll hopefully be able to wrap that up sometime this summer. The other thing I'd like to mention is that this is a periodic review of an LCP. And what that means, just for context, is that the recommendations that may come out in the June or July meeting will be recommendations to the county about how they might improve and enhance the LCP implementation. Any particular policy changes that might be recommended would then have to go through an LCP amendment process with the commission, assuming that the county was inclined or interested in making those kinds of changes. So that's just a final piece in the observation that there's lots of public process left to communicate about, you know, how these things work or not. And I'd encourage you to treat them that way, and we're interested in as specific feedback and comment as you can give us at this time. The second comment I wanted to make was that all of us here and others in the agency have already received a substantial amount of feedback, particularly on the agricultural recommendations. We received feedback from the commission itself at the February hearing, and we have taken to heart that there is a lot of serious concern about some of the recommendations that have been raised. So we wanted you to know that, and that we are aware that there are some issues that definitely need conversation and dialogue. And that's particularly important to us because the one of the primary policies of the Coastal Act is, in fact, the protection of agricultural land uses in the coastal zone. So as a staff of the commission, we are obligated to bring forward recommendations that achieve that goal, and we're not interested in bringing forward recommendations that would undermine that fundamental policy of the Coastal Act. It's within that context that we're concerned or have brought up issues related to protection of sensitive habitats, riparian corridors, and those sorts of things. And so I wanted to acknowledge that fundamental policy that we are trying to achieve. And as you know, there are quite a few recommendations in the document that address how we might better protect agriculture in San Luis Obispo County. That's my initial thoughts on how this process would work. We are interested, again, on specific feedback. If you have comments and concerns about specific recommendations, there is a handout that's available that summarizes all of the agricultural recommendations of the report. I think it's in the back of the room on a table. With that, I will pass it over to the Agricultural Commissioner for a couple comments.
Thank you very much. Is this mic on? My name is Bob Lilly. I'm the Assistant Ag Commissioner, and we have various county staff here. Robert Hopkins, who's our lead staff person in our land use planning program, and Pat Beck with the planning department, and John Mark back in the audience, who's worked extensively in the water quality area. And so we have some general comments to start it off, and we're hoping the main purpose of this is that the agricultural industry will step forward tonight and provide their input to the Coastal Commission staff. Our department's been involved with land use planning issues affecting agriculture and environmental issues for the last 17 years, advising the county planning director and the Board of Supervisors on these matters. And we've kind of had a general theme over this period of time that's worked pretty well for us, and that is that we talk about agriculture but not for agriculture. And this has served us pretty well to kind of be a third-party independent voice speaking about agricultural issues. Over that period of time, we've supported and implemented various efforts to protect agricultural resources in the county. We've been very involved in a process which came to an end in 1998, developing an ag and open space element for the county. And we worked on that for about 15 years, and there's a number of policies in there that were adopted by the Board of Supervisors to protect ag resources. And over the last 2 years, now we're putting forward implementing ordinances to implement those policies. We've had a great deal of success in protecting ag resources from development in the county. We've dealt with a fairly no-nonsense approach towards changing the zoning of ag property to allow for more development and to minimize the negative effect on agriculture from extensive subdivision and parcelization of land. However, many of these recommendations within the Coastal Commission's recommendations, we feel will interfere with agricultural activities. And those recommendations that do interfere with the ag activities will indeed create a negative impact on San Luis Obispo County's agriculture. As an example, we've been working off of the executive summary. There's four recommendations here that would be, as a good example, that would may interfere clearly with ag activities. Coastal development permits for intensifying crops, limiting crop production practices with various measures that are listed here, strengthening water management requirements, and agricultural impact on scenic vistas. These are just four examples of recommended measures that would clearly impact agricultural operations and have a negative impact on county's agriculture. I think it needs to be clear that agriculture has a need for a great deal of flexibility in their operations. Just by the nature of the business, the agriculturalist has to be able to turn on the dime to deal with crop decisions, marketing demands, economic factors, weather conditions, pest pressures, the list goes on. But it's a very unique industry that has to be able to make quick decisions and really to turn on a dime. And to impose permits on an industry like that, just the sheer period of time that a permit takes to process, the staff to process it and to go through a public hearing leaves the farmer basically in the dust with the quick decisions that need to be made. Also, this would put our local agriculturalists at an economic disadvantage trying to compete in a marketplace where farmers in other parts of the state and the nation and other countries are being able to operate without such a permit. And agriculture has to operate very efficiently, and decisions need to be made quickly, and these types of permits would interfere with that as well. There's sections in this document that relate to pesticides, and I think we need to say that the pesticide regulatory program in California is conducted through the California Environmental Protection Agency through the Department of Pesticide Regulation. And they're the exclusive agency that regulate pesticides in the state. And that system then is delivered locally through the county ag commissioner. And reading through the document, there's a lot of language in here that relates to pesticides and further regulation of pesticides. And we felt that there was quite a few assumptions made in here based on some of the pesticide data that's out there. As an example, one sentence in here says that there's been a 24% increase of bad actor pesticides in the county. And another sentence says pesticides will be carried into coastal waters. And so this type of language introduces a lot of assumptions based on just some fairly simple and specific pesticide use information. So it needs to be pointed out that there's a thing called preemption in California that local agencies cannot adopt additional regulatory measures that they would be preempted by the California Department of Pesticide Regulation. And I've passed out to the commission staff and to the Ag Liaison Board the statutes and the legal aspects of that. And California's program is certified under the California Environmental Quality Act, the Pesticide Regulatory Program. As far as the water quality sections, there's a number of local activities already in place dealing with non-point source pollution. Our department is working closely with the Regional Water Quality Control Board and the Farm Bureau and other entities in a proactive fashion to deal with water quality programs. And there's also a number of other existing programs that are already in place addressing a number of these issues. We've mentioned the ag and open space element. The county also has a grading ordinance that addresses many of these issues. And there's a number of agencies locally that are working cooperatively to address these items. There's the NRCS and the RCDs and the UC Cooperative Extension Office and our office are working cooperatively with the ag industry to address many of these issues. So at this point in time, we'd like to encourage the ag industry to speak up as we go through these. And as a department, we'll be working with the Coastal Commission staff directly up in Santa Cruz in the early part of April. And so we'll be carrying the ball at that point in time. And so at this point in time, I'd like to turn it over to Robert for a few introductory comments.
Okay, I'm Robert, Robert Hopkins. I'm a deputy ag commissioner for San Luis Obispo County. And as Bob said, I do a lot of the individual project review for the department. And I want to keep my remarks fairly brief and give an opportunity, plenty of opportunity for whoever from the public wants to speak tonight. Because as Bob said, we will be working with the Coastal Commission staff. And I don't know whether we want to just get into various sections of the I think I'll wait and make some further comments when we get into specific sections. So.
Let's turn it over to Don Warden.
Okay, so I guess we'll turn it over to Don Warden then.
Good evening. I'm Don Warden. Chair of the Ag Liaison Committee, and we're a committee that advises the Board of Supervisors on agricultural issues and policy issues. We spend a lot of time on the ag and open space element in the past and other issues such as the grading ordinance and so on. I'd like to introduce the, we have a 10-member board that is a has been established by the Board of Supervisors. I'd like to introduce those members. On my immediate left is Dan Westergaard from Paso Robles, John Mino from Morro Bay, Bill Struble from Napomo, Coralie McMillan from Shandon, or Paso Robles. We'll get way out to Shandon. And Wayne Lamb from Sea Canyon, Avila area. I'll be brief as far as our comments. We've had one meeting to review these issues. We basically preliminarily supported the preliminary review that the Ag Commissioner has made and offered comments to that. Some of those issues Bob Lilly alluded to already, so I won't repeat those. But certainly, I think the ag community is very concerned about it and would like to see some changes that are made. I think that people are very concerned about the flexibility that is allowed for agriculture to continue, to be able to change crops and to compete with the economic situation. I think that they're concerned about a confusion between regulatory agencies. I see some duplication among agencies in these proposals, and I think that many of the proposals that have been made are already covered by other agencies, like Water Quality Control Board for TMDLs and so on. And some of these programs are just in their infancy, so we hate to see someone else, another agency or additional regulation step in to confuse people even more. We see that there has been a spirit of cooperation among farmers and agriculturalists in the coastal zone, and we certainly don't want to do anything to limit that. And I think that, you know, as I mentioned, Bob has already alluded to a lot of agricultural concerns. We're in a position to advise the Board of Supervisors, so certainly this group is most interested in the comments that are made this evening so that we can arrive at deliberations that will contribute to the Board of Supervisors' final decision. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I was glad that Bob mentioned regulatory coordination and that sort of thing, because we are interested in hearing specific comments on how the regulatory process might be made more efficient or more effective. We've worked with the NRCS up in Monterey County, for example, with a programmatic approval of various kinds of activities to control sedimentation and deal with streams and that sort of thing in the Elkhorn Slough watershed. So, you know, believe me, we are also interested in minimizing regulatory confusion, because we have to interact with all those agencies as well. At this time, I guess the way we thought we'd structure the comments is to work through different issue groups, basically three issue areas: water quality and habitat protection, intensification of agricultural uses, and then move into the protection of agriculture, which includes the number of recommendations in there concerning things like lot line adjustments and protection of agriculture from non-agricultural or supplemental uses that might be adversely affecting the ability of agriculture to continue. If we get through all those issues, we can just open the floor to any other concerns that people might have. So we would like to start with water quality and habitat concerns. The recommendations cover things like grading within a riparian corridor, or you know, expanding a field towards a wetland or something of that nature. Those sorts of impacts, also sedimentation and runoff, polluted runoff concerns that might be raised in the vicinity of coastal water bodies. If people are interested in talking on that issue, if you could just come up to the microphone, give us your name, and spend about 2 minutes at the most. We have quite a few people here tonight, so we'd like to give everyone a chance to get their comments on the record. So I might turn first to the Agricultural Commission and see if they have more specific comments on water quality and habitat, or we can come back if you want to. Okay. How about the Ag Liaison? Anything on water quality at this time?
I have something. On page 77 of your, you have, I happen to own property in Morro Bay, and I'm familiar with one creek in particular, borders my property, San Bernardo Creek, and a statement is made on page 77. It says San Bernardo Creek is known to be contaminated with coliform from cattle. And I'm not sure exactly what the point of the statement is, because I suspect it's also probably contaminated with coliform from deer and other species as well, and there's really no, there's no study that's cited or anything to, you know, reference what this is about outside of singling out one particular creek. And I'm just curious to find out what the nature of the comment is outside of a somewhat negative.
I'm not sure what the source was. We could get you that information later if you want, but I think the intention was simply to frame the potential impact that might be associated with a certain land use. So it's not to single out a specific creek or set of uses per se.
Okay. Because the other thing is, I like, as far as coliform, I don't know of any studies that have been done on coliform. I know studies have been done on nitrates, but there are many sources of nitrates. And so, again, I just hope that's the case here, that something's not just thrown out here that doesn't have any impact.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that inadvertently that source was left out. What I did was review existing information that I had to identify the scope of potential impacts on various water sources from agriculture, and that those sources ranged from the NEP studies and in various other studies I could find. This was intended just as an example, not to single out a particular source, and I can certainly get that source for you.
Okay, but I bet it was nitrates and not coliform.
I'll check on that. Thank you.
Okay, any members of the public like to speak to the issue of water quality and habitat protection?
How do you turn this on? Is it on? Okay. My name is Clyde Warren from San Simeon Creek, and I wanted to address the siltation. You got one sentence in here. Agriculture and grazing are suspected sources of siltation in Sinkapoa Creek in the North Coast area. my observations, I believe that siltation is the majority of its natural siltation, where the creek changes course and erodes the creek banks out, or slides that are feeding into the stream bed itself. We've done a steelhead rescue project, San Simeon Creek, since 1989. When we started there, we had our first rescue was 47 steelhead trout, and we moved them over to Van Gordon Creek to a holding pond. And over the years, last year, our capacity is 1,500 trout, and we every year do a 2-mile section of creek that dries up every year. And last year, we did 4 holes, and we got our 1,500 trout. We left several thousand fish there to die, lack of water, birds, whatever else will get to them. And the siltation doesn't seem to be as the problem. The problem is rainfall. Having enough rainfall for the steelhead to get in and spawn, and enough to get back out to the ocean. The last 4 or 5 years, we've had fairly consistent winters, and we have definitely noticed an increase in spawning. We've reestablished the steelhead spawning in Van Gordon Creek, and so we know it works, but I don't think agriculture and grazing is the problem for siltation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, this evening is not going to fall out. Joy Fitzhugh, and you, I saw you Monday evening as an individual. Tonight I'm talking to you as a legislative analyst for San Luis Obispo County Farm Bureau. And one of the things that unfortunately has upset many of our members is the text that basically positions agriculture as a bad actor. Talks about all the damage that grazing does. And you heard me Monday night when I talked about the large mammal issue. Talks about the problems of the row crops and the vineyards and the orchards. And it wasn't a balanced presentation. I mean, it set the specter along with the pesticide, which you're going to talk about later, I think. But it gave agriculture, put agriculture in a position, and many of our people felt very defensive about it because they're going, wait a minute, this looks like they're telling us that, you know, we don't know what we're doing. Which leads me to a conversation that we had earlier where Farm Bureau has joined with a coalition of Farm Bureau counties to work with our landowners in voluntary programs, along with NRCS, along with Cooperative Extension, along with the Ag Commissioner, as I think Robert was explaining earlier. And we'd like to see a way that you folks, as opposed to adding regulation, would be able to add to these programs, help us. Now, the help doesn't mean once there is philosophical acceptance of the program, we then have strings attached to it so the poor guy is hung out there to dry later. So we are hoping, and as we talked earlier, that you'll be able to sit down with us and talk about some of these programs, because that's where we need the help, as opposed into the regulation. And as I said on Monday night, sedimentation, I feel much like Clyde said, much of it is public created or urban created going into ag. We're not saying that ag doesn't have it. Ag's trying to work on it. Unfortunately, we're not seeing the same sort of situation happening in the public sector or in the what's coming off of the urban. Thank you.
Other comments on the issue area of water quality protection, habitat protection, wetlands? We could include in this category concerns about pesticides and sedimentation, some of the recommendations that were made concerning those issues.
John Salisbury, I'm a sixth-generation California farmer. My kids are seventh. We've been farming the same piece of dirt in Sacramento County since 1850. This is our 151st year, and we wouldn't have got there if we didn't know what we were doing. And I have a little concern about, people tell us how to do our business. Just a couple quick notes. We're in a very variable business. Normally this time of year I'd be worrying about frost control on my grapes up in Paso Robles. I have grapes here in Avila Valley. I'm going to water next week and put on some fertilizers because they're pushing. So permits scare the heck out of me because I'd just be scared to have to go in there and say, gee, can I water or can I disc or something like that, because I got to, 90% of my job is timing. I got to make sure I have the right equipment, the right people, and the right timing and the right materials to do my job. And to come get a permit and somebody says, well, we'll get to you next week, it could be disastrous. Pesticides. California has the most stringent pesticide regulations in the world. I can't see where maybe the Coastal Commission or everybody else will start telling us what we should put on, because we do have a very stringent operation here in California. I also farm in Mexico. We don't have permits in Mexico. I have a tomato operation there. And we start getting into competition with these foreign countries because they don't have these restrictions. It just makes life much tougher. One third of all the pesticides I just read the other day by weight in California are agriculture, one third. That means two thirds are supplied by municipalities, government, homeowners, et cetera. Quickly thing on water management. I farm 30 acres in the Avila Valley. I'm just downhill from 24 lots in the Bastia property. I will probably use one third the water for my grapes that they use on their whole 24 lots, just for putting up, just flushing their toilets, doing their landscaping, and anything else they might use it for. I'll be one third. I got 30 acres of intensified grapes. For erosion control, I do have some fairly good sized slopes there, but we put in our cover crops, we put in coffer dams, we put in all the blockings we could, we did ditching. But I had to sit there and take water off of these 24 lots, which are asphalt, concrete, and everything else, and sit there midnight sandbagging, catching this water. It wasn't from my vineyard. It passed through me because a lot of these lots were set up to take water fast. Back in the big floods we had where Highway 5 was closed up in the Sacramento Delta, we always had the watershed coming off the foothills to collect that water. But when all the houses went in around Elk Grove and all along I-5, it just hit that and just slammed right across, closed down the freeway, came over and flooded a bunch of our property. So housing, and when you're talking vistas, I'd much rather see, instead of houses on hilltops, I'd much rather see a vineyard or avocado orchard, or citrus, or so forth and so on. I got this feeling that we're kind of I got a bullseye on our head. We're the endangered species, when I thought we were the last bastion against urban sprawl. But we're getting regulation after regulation after regulation. It makes it tough to make a living. So just, let's see, that's That's it for now.
Thank you.
I'm Walter Fitchute from Cambria. And exactly what the gentleman said before, the runoff from the urban area into agriculture, I'm faced with that not only in the water runoff, the siltation, but also they seem to spray without any management at all. One piece of property next to me, they sprayed over a quarter acre of grass. It's brown. Some of it even migrated down in my pasture. So you want to regulate us. I think maybe if you're going to regulate us, you're going to regulate everybody. You just can't pick on the agricultural people. It's sedimentation. There's a good many of us, ranchers and farmers, are taking the range water management programs. I think maybe you ought to look at that. A lot of it teaches us how to better manage our water, the siltation. I'm under that program. I put in a sedimentation pond to catch the sediments from the urban development. And then you guys come along with this criteria, and I feel like somebody just shot me because I'm trying to do it right, and then I get hammered for it. Thank you.
Bob Barlogio from Harmony and also Paso Robles area. My concern is with the 100-foot setback on from streams and everything. You know, if you got a 100-foot setback and you've got like a 400 feet along a stream, but that's an acre of land that you just put out of service. And being stewards of the property and everything, we want to take care of our property. And property up in Harmony has been in family for 3-4 generations now. And, you know, taking a couple of acres out of land might not seem much to some of you guys, but to us it can be quite a bit.
Thank you.
Thank you. Eric Greening, and I'm a member of Life on Planet Earth. And the pesticide issue is significant. I'm not sure that what we've heard is necessarily an argument against regulation, but I think I'm hearing a strong argument, which I support, for equal regulation. And in addition to the urban uses of pesticides, there may be a point where state agency comes head-to-head with state agency. I'd like to know what experience the Coastal Commission has in regulating pesticide use by Caltrans and other public agencies. Caltrans routinely uses toxic substances in maintaining the roadsides. Are they required to submit any kind of plans? Are they required to desist when they're near waterways? What is the status of the relationship between those two agencies? Thank you.
Maybe I should just make a brief comment before the next speaker. A couple things. On the pesticide issue, I think the recommendations try to focus on best management practices, the kinds of things that NRCS might be, you know, encouraging, such as buffer strips and sedimentation basins and things, as a mechanism to intercept runoff that may have pesticides in them. But we definitely recognize, as Bob mentioned, that there's a state regulatory apparatus for the application of pesticides, and we're definitely not talking about that. The Coastal Commission would not, at least the recommendations that are in this document, are not raising the question about permitting application of pesticides. In terms of the question about water quality, it's probably also worth observing that California, in the last couple of years, adopted a new non-point source pollution program statewide. And it's a program that's being implemented jointly between the State Water Resources Control Board and the Regional Water Resources Control Boards and the Coastal Commission. So there is this new program in place now where the two agencies are working together to address water quality issues, urban and agricultural, rural and urban, all aspects of water quality, recreational boating, all kinds of boating, et cetera. And so we are working with the regional boards and the state water board to come up with programs that make sense and that do not duplicate or add additional regulatory requirements, as opposed to integrate and synthesize what each of the agency's concerns might be with respect to water quality. So much of what is in the preliminary recommendations is partly a function of that new new statewide program that has recently come into place. With respect to Caltrans, I don't think the Coastal Commission has done anything specific with regulation of pesticides that Caltrans might be using.
Jeff Palmer from Atascadero, and I see the term best management practices used throughout the document. I wondered if there is a single defined set of BMPs that each agency draws from, if everybody's on the same page when BMPs are used. Excuse me. Also, I'd like to encourage everybody to push non-regulatory and educational outreach programs for water quality education. And one of the bullets here on the summary lists incorporate performance standards and monitoring requirements into erosion control programs. What might those be, the performance standards?
Hi, my name is Roger Lyon from Cayucas. I'm here representing Hearst Ranch, which has the largest cattle operation in the coastal zone in this county. First of all, I appreciate the Coastal Commission staff coming here and also the Coastal Commission at the February hearing, recognizing the concerns of the ag community and coming here to listen. I urge you to listen to the Ag Liaison Committee, to the Farm Bureau, and the concerns. You mentioned that agriculture is a particular concern in the Coastal Act, and protecting that is an important thing. And protecting the viability of ag means allowing flexibility of the rancher in doing that. On the habitat issue, I had one specific point as far as preliminary recommendation 4.1 on page 122 and preliminary recommendation 4.4 on page 132. And I hope that there's not unintended results here. 4.1 suggests changing the environmentally sensitive habitat area designation to expand it to include, among other things, areas designated by U.S. Fish and Wildlife as critical habitat. Recently, U.S. Fish and Wildlife designated a large area under court order for the red-legged frog. In this county, that designates the entire area in the coastal zone from the Monterey County line to Morro Bay. That entire area is critical habitat. If you go to preliminary recommendation 4.4, as I read it, it would prohibit any use within an environmentally sensitive habitat area except resource-dependent uses. I think that would have far-reaching impacts on agricultural users to continue their agricultural operations they've got right now. I've spoken with the people that prepared the critical habitat designation with U.S. Fish and Wildlife in Sacramento and would urge your staff to do the same. I don't think that they intended that designation be a blanket prohibition area on uses. Thank you.
Thank you. I think you're right to point that out in a quick clarification. I think the reference to critical habitat designations, you're right, those designations tend to be quite broad. And it doesn't necessarily mean that all of the land that's actually within that area is critical habitat. It just means that you may have a stream, for example, within that area that could have that particular species. So I think the way we intended our recommendations to work would be through the development review process, whereby if it's, you know, there's some probability that there's a critical habitat in that vicinity, and you'd say, okay, there might be critical you know, red-legged frogs here, if there wasn't actually a water body within that area, then of course it wouldn't be habitat. So I think that is a good clarification. In terms of your second comment, the Coastal Act and the LCP currently require that only resource-dependent uses occur within habitat that's identified as such. So that's not really a change in the LCP. It's also not retroactive. I mean, that's probably a good general observation for all of the recommendations, too, is that none of these recommendations would apply to existing agricultural operations in the sense that if a field is being farmed for, you know, 10, 20, 50 years and is already within a certain riparian's, 100 feet within a riparian zone, for example, there really is no trigger for, you know, requiring a 100-foot setback, at least under the Coastal Commission's jurisdiction. I think what we're talking about is new activities, new development that may encroach into sensitive areas. So that's an important thing to keep in mind, too. We're not talking about coming in and changing existing practices.
Pam Marshall, Hetherington Environmental Center of San Luis Obispo. I just want to reiterate something that I said last night about development upstream from areas like Arroyo Grande Creek that are specifically impacting that water body. And I think I gave Charles a copy of a notice of preparation that specifically states that a development is going to impact the Arroyo Grande Creek. And I can't stress this enough that as we go through the process of trying to straighten out Arroyo Grande Creek in the flood zone, that if we're having subdivisions up the creek that are going to impact all of that area, that it's recognized as significant to that water body. I'd also like to comment on the fact that I'm glad that you went into the pesticide issue in the local coastal plan. I think it's very important that we have each of the creeks that lead into the ocean tested for pesticides to make sure that the applications that the farmers are applying are not running off and running out into the ocean. I know that most of them are very good stewards of the land and that they try to stay within the regulations, but I think that that would be a very telling endeavor. Thank you.
Why don't I come back to the Ag Commissioner for this particular topic?
Just a couple wrap-up points on the pesticide issue. The Regional Water Quality Control Board, is the lead agency in dealing with pesticides in water. I don't see anybody from that agency here, although we did invite them. To my knowledge, they have a designation called impaired water bodies, and to my knowledge, there's no impaired water bodies in San Luis Obispo County due to pesticides currently. Although there's a lot of language in here that infers that the water coming off of the farms is contaminated with pesticides, we do have impaired water bodies for sediment, and there are various programs that are underway addressing that. But I think we need to have a more clear search of the data and a better coordination with the regional board as far as dealing with the pesticide issue and dealing with the reality of what the test data is showing versus what might be. And as far as the comment about Caltrans, we regulate all government agencies that use pesticides equally the same as we regulate the agricultural industry, so they're regulated as well. On the topic of sedimentation, the Cooperative Extension Office, the Farm Advisors here, has had a very active program with our cattle industry, providing short courses, and they're providing their local plans to address sedimentation issues, and a good part of our cattle industry has been involved with that. And now they're starting to expand the short courses into other forms of agricultural uses to address sedimentation as well. That's it for now.
Any other comments in the area of water quality? And
yeah, just a question, Bob. What kind of pesticides is showing up in these studies? What specific ones? Are they tied to any particular crop?
There's no designation for a paired water body for pesticides currently in the county. There are some in Monterey County and other parts of the state, but I'm not aware of any pesticide problem that's been created in a water body in San Luis Obispo County.
My name is Jim Patterson, and over the last couple of years, I have had an opportunity to work with the Regional Water Quality Control Board and Fish and Game and other agencies looking at both coastal and inland streams. And there is a lot of evidence of sedimentation in the streams, both from urban uses as well as agricultural uses. And I think we need to take a look at that. From what information I have so far, there's really a lack of data on pesticides occurring in the streams. And as Mr. Lilly stated, there are impaired water bodies in the county, but none that are impaired due to pesticides. And I think there's just a lack of data. There isn't monitoring going on now, and we need to encourage that. That is happening on a broader scale, and I think in the future we'll get more information on that. I have to applaud the efforts that are going on in this county, efforts by the agricultural community, the commissioner's office, the Cooperative Extension Service, the Regional Water Quality Control Board, to voluntarily deal with these issues proactively. Unfortunately, and there's a whole list of programs out there that people are engaging in up and down the coast. And unfortunately, not all of the people engaged in agriculture are good stewards of the land. The individuals, the people that are here tonight, that are speaking here tonight, that are members of these boards, I have no doubt are. Unfortunately, the trend in America is towards corporate agriculture. And I don't see those people here tonight talking about their practices. I don't know that they're the ones that are involved in these voluntary programs. And I think the key word there is voluntary. A lot of damage is done prior to engaging in these voluntary programs. I think there is a need for taking a look at ag conversion for uses that impact resources. You know, if zoning changes, let's take residential, for example. If someone wants to go from a single-family residential use to a multifamily residential use where you increase the density, they have a regulatory and permitting process to go through. Certain agricultural operations, it's still agriculture, but there's a very significant difference on how it impacts resources. And those are the kinds of things that I think need to be looked at and looked at carefully. We see it in our county now with the intensification, the vineyards going in, where you have significant land use changes that do impact our water resources. We need to take a look at that up front. Thank you.
Hello. Okay. Hi, my name is Sonar Saruf, and I work on pesticide issues with the Environmental Center of San Luis Obispo, also known as ECOSLO. And I'd like to address that pesticide runoff, of course, does happen from urban use as well as from agricultural use. And I have been in contact with the Regional Water Quality Control Board because I've been trying to find out if there has been any studies done on pesticide residues in San Luis Obispo County in the creeks and watersheds. And they haven't done any as far as what they've told me, and they don't plan on doing any until sometime in 2002. So there is a lack of data to determine whether or not any of these watersheds have high amounts of pesticide residues. We do see in other counties there are high levels of toxicity within creeks and watersheds. So I do support monitoring. As far as I know, ag is exempt from any kind of water quality monitoring. So in order for us to determine where these pesticide residues do come from, whether it's from urban, whether it's from agriculture, most likely from both, but to figure out at what points this is happening, I feel that monitoring needs to be done so that we can have a better comprehensive view of where pesticides are going and where they're running off into. Thanks.
Eric Greening again. One sedimentation issue that hasn't been touched on, and a lot of people just don't want to go there because when it's happening, it's not the first thing on people's mind, and that has to do with fire suppression. Just by eyeballing the streams, it appears that a lot of the worst sedimentation events happen during the rainy season after a fire, and a lot of it has to do with the haste with which fire lines are cut. And I'm not sure how to avoid that. I'm not arguing here for more fire, artificial fire starting either, because that often involves heavy equipment busting through the wildlands and the rangelands. I think I'm arguing for environmental review of the practices on both sides of the equation and not holding them exempt or harmless because the one is emergency response and the other is somehow labeled as a prevention activity. It's a very real factor, and even though a lot of this activity is happening outside the coastal zone, the sediment often comes to rest in the coastal zone, which again speaks for the holistic view of watersheds. When I made the comment in Cambria that the coastal zone is actually everything that drains into the ocean, I wasn't necessarily arguing that the micromanagement of roof heights and deck sizes has any reason to come any farther inland than it does. But certainly the watershed-specific issues, I think there needs to be more cooperation between the Coastal Commission, where these issues come to rest, and the areas upstream where they're generated. And I would like to see fire suppression and fire management activities covered as a topic. Thank you.
I'd like to chime in here for just a second. Eric brought something to mind that's been very important to me, and that's the number of fire suppression units that are out there on our grazing lands. And they're black, they're red and white, they all have four legs, and they do an excellent job of reducing the fire hazard that we have in the county. And in reading the comments about rangelands and grazing lands and the impact of grazing, I think that we left out a very important aspect of grazing that goes on, and a valuable contribution of grazing that goes on to our rangelands and our sediment problems, our fire problems, all of those kinds of things are not acknowledged at all in the document. And I think the key here is a balance, and it's very difficult for me in reading through the document, particularly on things like sedimentation, to balance the strong points and to balance some of the negatives that are brought out in the document. We have the Regional Water Quality Control Board that's implementing the TMDL program, and that's very evident in the Morro Bay National Estuary program. And if we confuse that with another layer of regulation, I'm concerned about that program and the spirit of cooperation that's been achieved through the farm community. I think that when we start talking about improving the mechanisms to fully implement management measures, I think that the document doesn't recognize that there are a whole series of management measures that could be taken into effect to reduce sediment, and they're each individual on different properties. I see properties that are avocados that are on 30% or greater slopes, for instance, that have permanent cover, that have the trees, that have proper management as far as their water management is concerned for floods and so on, and you don't see any erosion. I see circumstances where there's flat land that has erosion. I think that we need to acquaint people and to support various county programs and so on that will inform people about options that are available, rather than to regulate. Because some people just don't know. Some people haven't thought about it. I participated in a farm water quality short course. Some people have been in a range water quality short course. And I think there are valuable ideas there. We can manage dry farm lands that are tilled during the wintertime in certain ways that will reduce erosion. We can collect that sediment that runs off the land and move it back up the hillside. And each farm is different. Each farm is not either intense or grazing. There's a combination, perhaps, of both. I testified in the hearing earlier that you had at that you know, in my particular circumstance, I've got hillside little creeks that run off the hillsides into the lower farming land. And if we were to implement a 100-foot setback, for instance, if I were to intensify in a certain manner, or if I hadn't done that, or if I came under review because of some other development that I might do in the way of buildings or whatever, I'm not sure with the wording of the document. But anyway, if I were to have that 100-foot setback, I'd lose probably 40% of the land that I farm that's in the Morro Bay watershed. And because of the number of creeks and the acreage that's taken out of production. However, with proper management, I think that I could eliminate the sediment that goes off. I think another area that's very important is that, Margie Lindquist from the NRCS mentioned this, in our farm water quality short course, that there is so much confusion among agriculturalists as to what they can and can't do in the stream beds and in reducing the siltation and erosion that occurs from the stream action, that people just don't do it anymore. They're afraid to do anything because they're afraid of the process. And what we need really is to get a streamlining process and your support for a streamlining process where people can feel comfortable, they can get the permits, they know who to deal with, rather than to take a chance on fish and game this time and all of a sudden have the Army Corps of Engineers come down on them, or have the Coastal Commission come down on them, or the county, or whoever. We have gone through a very strong, grading ordinance revision that was implemented. I noticed that in the document you made reference to one situation in the Los Osos Valley that occurred that he used as an example. I think that you know, that situation was probably handled to a degree, and probably some of the regulations could be strengthened so that those kinds of things didn't occur, particularly with the amount of earthwork and the site development of for the residents and that kind of thing, because that's one of the things that's most prominent in that particular development. But I think that we need to know that ahead of time and not get a lot of confusion between agencies as to who's managing the situation.
Just a brief response. I think those are really good remarks, and we are supportive of streamlining and bringing more understandable ability to the process. I mentioned earlier that we worked with the NRCS and the Elkhorn Slough watershed and on an effort that was regulatory streamlining, basically. And this kind of goes to the question about BMPs as well, which was the NRCS identified sets of practices for certain kinds of activities that would be burdensome for people on the land to actually have to get permits to do things like create a sediment basin or do work in a creek in order to address an erosion problem or something like that. And so what we did was review the NRCS program at a program level and had a chance to review what kinds of practices they were actually talking about. That program was approved by our commission, or is actually a consistency review in that case, which is a slightly different animal, but it's kind of like a master permit. And the commission approved that, and now that work is ongoing under the auspices of NRCS, but we don't do permits for that work. It's all under the master approval, and that's the kind of streamlining that I think we'd be, it'd be definitely worth having more conversations about how to get to that point in San Luis Obispo County.
And
that's part of our grading process too, an alternate review process through the NRCS that we do have. So, you know, I don't know where things fell through the cracks on the example that you have, but I think that you know, those could be improved. It isn't an effective. Okay.
Actually,
so there you go.
Right.
Some of these things take so long.
We've been taking so long to review it.
Yeah.
We're actually on the verge of releasing a staff report on our review of that grading ordinance, probably at the end of this week, I'm told.
And maybe your support of that then, without any other qualifications, would be the thing we need.
Well, I'm not sure I can say that at this time, but we definitely anticipate having more conversation with county staff about their grading ordinance as it goes forward through the process.
Hi, my name is Bob Aknafisi. I'm a staff attorney with the Environmental Defense Center. I wanted to briefly talk about an issue that was brought up about the critical habitat designation for the red-legged frog. There does seem to be a confusion about what the designation of critical habitat means. Usually, critical habitat is not designated unless something in the order of 95 to 98% of the a species habitat is destroyed. And the designation doesn't mean that in every part of that area you're going to find currently species occupying that area. The area may be designated as critical habitat because it's important as a corridor or as a link between, you know, two different populations that need to crossbreed in order to have the genetic viability of the continued existence. The point of the designation is not to maintain a low level of the species on the brink of extinction, but to set aside enough land that would permit the species to come back and be recovered. As we know, it doesn't really do much in terms of what uses. On the federal law, it doesn't mean much in terms of what uses you can put that land to if it's privately owned. I do think that it would be appropriate for the Coastal Commission to take into account whether an area has been designated as critical habitat. There is a lot of work and study has gone into designation, and to then translate that into a state designation of important sensitive habitat would be appropriate to look at that designation at the federal level. So I just wanted to clarify the confusion. It doesn't mean in every inch of it you're going to find red-legged frogs. It's an area that is generally considered to be important if we want to bring the species back into a status where it's no longer endangered and can be taken off the list.
We're about halfway through tonight, and I was wondering whether we ought to move into the other topics. We've been hearing some comments on intensification of agriculture already. I don't know if there are more people who want to speak to that issue. If there are, we could finish those up and then move into the other recommendations as well. Just want to make sure everyone gets a chance to make their comments before 9 o'clock.
If I may, I would like to just briefly continue a conversation that was brought up earlier, and that's regarding setbacks in riparian corridors. Mr. Warren spoke of how a 100-foot setback would impact his farming operation in Morro Bay, and setback both in agricultural usage along streams as well as urban uses along streams is a topic of conversation among all resource managers that deal with that particular resource. And the jury's still out. I haven't seen anybody come up with a number that can be consistently applied with the desired results. And I'm wondering if Mr. Warren, and I'm asking for the benefit of the Coastal Commission and basically everyone that is involved in these issues, has some thoughts about what is an appropriate setback. I mean, people talk about 25 feet, 50 feet, 100 feet. Well, 50 feet might be fine in one set of circumstances. 100 might be necessary in another set of circumstances. But it's an ongoing debate. And if Mr. Warren has some input for the Coastal Commission that they might use in their LCP recommendations, this would be a good opportunity. And I'd like to hear them too.
I think there are just a lot of factors that need to be considered. In this short course, we also learned that if you were to put in a cover crop, for instance, on a strip 15 feet wide on the 0 to 5% slope, that it'll trap, and I've forgotten the numbers, but it'll trap something like 90% of the sediment that runs off. So there are factors like that, and don't quote me on the numbers because they're not right. But there are studies that have been done that will give you some of that information. And I think that it a lot depends on the type of farming that you do. If most of your activities are during the summertime when there's no rain, then why have a setback except perhaps for the actual habitat that is involved with the riparian area? Why couldn't you be within 10 feet, 20 feet, 30 feet, 40 feet of the riparian area? And then in the fall, plant a cover crop that would keep the sediment from going into the creek. So there are a lot of different variable factors and a lot of different crops that make a big difference on how that might be handled. And I hate to see just one number thrown out there and everybody support this with such fervor.
Thank you. Completely different issue in terms of intensification, and that has to do with the regulatory setting in this county. It's perfectly understandable that people in agriculture want to be able to move fast, shift cropping patterns, etc. Under this county's land use ordinance and under the standards set by our agricultural and open space element, the conversion from open rangeland to irrigated cropland carries with it an 8-fold increase in building intensity, permissible building intensity on that land. And when it is not scrutinized, it amounts to a sort of a de facto zone change without the process of a zone change. The question is whether some kind of a two-track system could be put in place where those who are doing it for strictly agricultural reasons and have no intention of using any increase in building entitlements that would go with those cropping patterns would escape the kind of scrutiny that should be put on those who would use those building entitlements at some time. And they can be used in all kinds of ways. In other words, you can go from a house every 160 acres with the two primary residences on a 320-acre minimum with the open rangeland to two houses on 40-acre parcels or one house on 20-acre minimum parcels with the irrigated cropland. So if intensification is actually a step toward urbanification or sprawl, it needs a completely different kind of scrutiny than if it's done for agricultural reasons. And I think it should be put on the table that perhaps those who wish to escape the scrutiny that your commission is asking for not be able to take advantage of what amounts to an upzoning that goes with what's now an unregulated change in agricultural practices. Thank you.
Hi, Joy Fitzhugh again. I didn't know whether we could get up two and three times on one topic, so I'm beginning to wonder if maybe I've got a list of things, but I'll be happy to wait toward the end. It's just the things have been mentioned, so I'm right. Trying to figure out when we...
It's fine to speak multiple times. Some people in Cambria were up four times.
That's Cambria.
That's
yeah.
Right there.
I'm from Cambria.
But
well,
if they're all in a logical group, I mean, you could...
Okay.
We're just trying to keep... You know, get as much focused attention on issues as we can.
Because I know we bounced into the fire hazard
right.
one, which is back in, I think, Chapter 6 as opposed to being Chapter 5. But since it's been brought up, I'd like to mention it. And the one thing being is under the NEP, they have recognized the benefit of patchwork control burns, where they actually benefit the habitat Because if you don't have a controlled burn or you don't have some means of keeping the vegetation in a manner that the wildlife can get through it, it closes them out. And we have seen this happen with some of the air regulations. And I think you might want to acquaint yourself with the Air Resources Board's new agricultural burning guidelines, because that came out of the state level. They're working on it with the APCD here in San Luis Obispo, trying to come up with a program. You don't do control burns at the drop of a match. There are plans that need to be put in place. There are procedures that have to be followed. And I think it would be good to acquaint yourself with those so you know what we're talking about. One of the interesting things is in South County, there has been significant amount of control burns, and what you don't find is 58 fires, 41 fires. Now, if you don't know those numbers, those are the two major, major fires that happened in San Luis Obispo County, and I think it was Eric was alluding to the runoff, and those were your major issues. And the Morro Bay Estuary Program recognizes this, and they actually advocate controlled burning in a patchwork pattern, protecting the watershed, also allowing for that vegetation regrowth, which will allow people to then have the wildlife going through. If you look in a very heavy, dense vegetation area, you'll see that there aren't any animals in there because it's too dense to get in. The other thing, setbacks. Don Warden was absolutely right. It might be beneficial if some of you had an opportunity to go through the range water or farm water short course. It's very illuminating. Also, what it shows is that a lot of agriculturists are doing it right. It's a reconfirming process in many cases. And the setback situation is absolutely right. It can be a buffer of 10 feet. It could be a buffer of 20 feet, depending upon the slope, depending upon the type of soil. So to give an arbitrary set-down number on the number of feet of setback is strictly not appropriate. And I think you could see this if we sit down, if we're able to sit down with people like the NRCS, talk about the programs, talk about when you're talking about grading, because I think somehow that got into all of this too. They have an excellent workshop on road management and showing how no one solution is the solution to solving sediment erosion and runoff on agricultural roads or any other roads. So I think those are things that would be great for you folks to be able, and we'd be happy to set you up for going through one of these classes because I think it'd do a world of good. Intensification of agriculture, de facto zone change. That's like trying to crawl into somebody's head. I wouldn't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole. On our own personal operation, we changed some of our land to orchard to say that that was, that somebody could crawl into my head and say that's de facto zone changing. I find that rather insulting. Sorry, Eric. Corporate ranching, that was brought up. I think Monday night you heard Bobby Soto make the comment. There is very little corporate ranching in San Luis County. I mean, there's that couple of notable exceptions. But that isn't what our agricultural community is all about. We are small family operations. Now, we may have numbers of acres, but realizing that that doesn't mean we're big. We may have 1,000 acres and can only run 40, 50 head of cows. It's because of the type of acreage. You may have 2 acres of strawberries and have a much better income than 1,000 acres of grazing land. So you need to learn to understand what makes a operation viable. Across the board idea of this acres, this acres, this acres, this acres makes viability. A viability study is really very difficult, and I really worry about that sector of the plan that talks about viability studies. Thank you.
Just one more point on the numbers game. Most of us farmers that do wine grapes need at least 30 feet just to turn our equipment around. The same with our row crops, harvesting equipment, so forth, just need that much to turn around and go back down again. So that's just a minimum. But in my case, I farm next to flowing stream year-round, and I farm next to streams that flow 5 hours a year. Now, should they have the same setbacks? I don't think so.
Good evening. My name is David Pereira. The first thing I want to say is I'm going to be longer than 2 minutes. I'll exercise the Eric Greening rule and hop up all at once. Well, I'll do it's called a simul hop. So I'll stay here, hog the mic, and then you can shoot me and I'll leave. The first thing I want to say is that everyone's here reacting, and that's always a bad problem because that means there was a lack of communication. And without getting too admonishing and scolding, it's unfortunate that the Farm Bureau, the cattlemen, and the California Rangeland Trust were not consulted prior to your vast, extensive intensification of our lifestyle. So we're here because we don't necessarily want to shoot the messenger, but we're not real happy with the message, and the messenger is suspect. So we're here to be constructive, but this is very problematic, and I think that you need to understand that. Your best quote of the 352 pages is the first sentence. The Coastal Act requires that the maximum amount of agricultural land be maintained and the agriculture production and the conflicts between urban and agricultural land use be minimized. Okay. 352 pages later, I don't think any of us feel minimized. This is toxic regulation death. You have to understand why people get out of agriculture. It's because of the things you create. You've heard people here talk about the fear of pesticides, the fear of regulations, the overlap of regulations. It makes people do projects on weekends at night. So don't kill us with protection, okay? We'll do quite nicely, as we've done since time immemorial, on our own. So understand that's the flavor of what we're doing here. I'm going to go through a few things here that are on the intensification level, and we'll talk about them. I think the first thing that's kind of alarming and concerning is you use terms in here that aren't defined. Now, the worst thing you can do is give a politician or a bureaucrat wiggle room, and they can change any terms into anything they want. So if you're going to use some of these terms in here, you better glossarize them. Okay, now I could go through all these, and there's quite a few, but there are terms that you throw around, and they can mean just about anything and everything to everyone in this room as far as how you quantify it. The first one that jumps out, page 225, you talk about an easement in here in the lot line adjustment program. Now, you have to be real careful here that when you require an easement, you lose the ability for the, it's a taking issue is what you're setting up here. Okay, so now you have a legal problem. You're taking, you're devaluating property. You're dealing with one of the development rights, one of the bundle of rights that's there. The next thing you have to understand is the tax benefits that go with that. If it's not a voluntary quid pro quo, then in fact, they may not even get a tax benefit out of it. So you've hurt them in two ways. Again, trying to protect. The next is 236. In here, we get into the hellaciously amazing concept of limiting 3,500 square foot for a house. And all I can say is, where in the hell did you get that idea? I just, that's mind-numbing to me. That's like Bolshevik. That's Russia. If you own the property, you go through a grid designing the house, setting it back, and doing all these things, and for the Coastal Commission to come in and say that you're going to have to learn to get by with 3,500 square feet, that's incredible. So is the whole idea of a 5,000 square foot building footprint. You know, that works good in Oakland and in Berkeley, but it doesn't get it out here. And there's no reason to sweat and toil and labor at a piece of land and to have a regulatory body come in and say, okay, cut down your square footage. We really know what's best for you. We're trying to save your agricultural operation. Thank you. You use the term bona fide agricultural operation. There's an interesting concept. What the hell is that? When you're not making money, are you not bona fide? And so in a bad year, where none of us are bona fide? Or do we have to go into the mindset thing that Joy and Eric refuted about, where you're trying to get in their mind, and are they really in agriculture? Who cares? They're in agriculture. I think the real problem here is this presumed arrogance that people that have money are not good for the land. And in actuality, we're finding through a lot of the studies is that the people that have money will not overgraze the land because they're not concerned about the cash flow of the number of animal units in the heads. They also have the bank account that can make all of the improvements to make that piece of property really shine with nice new repainted or rebuilt barns. So this impression that the Beverly Hillbillies show up with all their oil money and create the mansion on the hill, that went out with the Beverly Hillbillies, okay? So don't take this assumption that statement homes and estate houses and corporate ranches and other things, don't try and make them sound so negative. They are not. There are examples where they could be. But again, that is the exception, not the rule. Next one is on page 237. It's been talked about a little bit here about the fire and the grazing issues. That is very, very seriously being considered at the national level right now. The big fiasco in New Mexico was very indicative of a lack of grazing. The grasses, the conformation of the grass and the change in the types of grasses that were grown carried that fire. There had been not only no grazing, but the types and the makeup of the grasses caused that to be a much more devastating fire. When you talk about sedimentation and reseeding, again, the seed base has been altered. So now there's no longer the same recovery potential that there was. Because, again, bureaucrats came in and tried to manipulate what Mother Nature has been doing. There's a reason why the Indians lit fires every year. They knew that was next year's food source. So let's give the Indian a little credit for some initial environmental science. Last on this, I'll probably save some of the rest because if we're going to try and keep this thing going. A lot of the little details in here, again, we talked about earlier, there's some kind of slanted yellow dog journalism happening here. And the one that I kind of took offense to was on 237, it talked about the Santa Barbara County and the extent of the vineyards and the loss of 2,000 oaks. Well, like a lot of the things in here, whether it's Sonoma County, these things, if you're talking just the coastal, use facts and figures that go just to there. This oak tree situation that ended up becoming front page news wasn't even in your coastal zone. And in fact, after it was reassessed, all of a sudden the sensational number of 2,000 ended up being 750 some, I believe, was the actual count. But more paper sold, obviously, when you say 2,000. So when you're going to put facts in here, make them pertinent and germane to what you're talking about. I think that would be a good suggestion. I have a lot more in here on the grazing issues. The thing I'll leave you with is I'm going to give you a copy of the California Rangeland Trust Grazing for Change. Okay, this is endorsed and put out by the Rangeland Trust, the California Cattlemen Association. In your report, I brought down my state regulations and went through it. There are 13 major policy statements and resolutions that you guys are in direct conflict with us on. Had you come to us so that we could have talked about this, I think we could have made this a little bit more palatable, or we would have known exactly where these problems are going to come from. But right now, as it stands, there's going to be serious opposition to a lot of the things in here. And the most important one is this intensification issue. In here, we have a whole policy that states that there is the need for multiple use application, both in agriculture and other ancillary activities, to keep the ranch viable. That's very critical. Very critical. And I'll go back into the rest later, but here's your bedtime reading.
Thank you very much. I would like to mention, I don't think I mentioned at the outset, that if you have written comments you want to give us, those are, that would be great too, if you don't get a chance to give us all the information that you have. Other comments on the issue areas of water quality, sedimentation, intensification? I know the ag.
One more here. Scott Mather, Morro Bay. It's going to be a hard act to follow there. I just have a short or quick comment. I just took the farm water quality short course addressing the issues of non-point pollution and erosion, and it works. It brought an awareness that I wasn't totally aware of. It works. It got you thinking about it. And I believe that's only the second course they've done. So on the county level, which I think is a lot of people would rather deal with the county level, you know, it works, and we'd like to kind of keep it at that level or give it a chance to play out and see how well it's taken on. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Aglius on board. In line with the keeping everything pertinent and supporting agriculture in this report, I'd like to point out one thing that really got my edge. On table 3.1 on page 78, you show the change in pesticide use for various commodities. I happen to be an avocado grower, and in there is an exceptionally large increase of pesticides used for avocados during the 1993 to 1998 period. Well, what happened is that increase that you show here is the direct result of using organic pesticides such as sugar, crushed flours, and some very lightweight oil. And all those items are approved by the California Coalition of Organic Farmers. And we had put that in the last 3 years because of some bugs that two critters that came up from south of the border and affected us. So on an emergency basis, we've had to go in there, whereas in the past, we've never had to spray for any of it. So I'd like to have reflected in here not sort of a specter of fear that pesticides are going hog wild in this county. And I'd like to make proper representation of this data on this table, and for avocados indicate that all that increase was a result of organic spraying for an emergency situation. And there's other places in this document that I feel are very inaccurate of what's going on. And I've never seen a study where where you're representing a very important issue of this whole document covering our coast here of using newspaper articles. And quoting that as fact, and I would really like to have you go through and look at this stuff, and if you're going to quote some facts in agriculture or whatever you're pertaining to here on some issue, that you use a government resource, a county document, something that has been reviewed and approved rather than, an editorial or somebody's writing in a newspaper article, because they can be very biased and very inaccurate, as you know.
Thank you. Does the Ag Commissioner have comments?
Yeah, I have a few comments. I won't cover many of the issues already been covered. One of the other sort of impressions that you get with reading Chapter 5 that may kind of miscommunicate is the amount of intensification that's occurring in the coastal zone, and especially with reference to vineyard. I'm not sure there's any sort of really commercial vineyards in the coastal zone, and in the coastal zone per se, it's going to be really difficult because it's so cold to have that. Obviously, in the general coastal area that San Luis Obispo County, there's intensification occurring, but in the coastal zone per se, there's some occurring, but the impression is that there's more occurring than actually is happening. For people who want to look in the handout for what the section that we're talking about, it's actually on page 6 and 7, and that's where there are some recommendations, and people have talked about it. Recommendations 5, 10, 5, 10, 5, 11, 5, 12, and 5, 13, and basically we see 5, 10, 11, and 13 is flowing together, and that is making reference to coastal permit for intensification of ag uses, and I think. It's been clarified tonight that we're really talking about new intensified uses, not existing intensified uses, because there were some questions about that, especially with the 100-foot setback. But I think that's been clarified. Anyway, that the there's a set of circumstances for when you would need a review in 5.10 and 5.11 is like a list of standards that to be incorporated into intensified ag, and then ag, and then 5.13 is more on a review process for when a grazing land is changed, especially with respect to visual impacts. And from our view, we don't really agree with a regulatory approach in that we would go with more of the educational approach that people have mentioned tonight. And what's been mentioned a couple times is We do have within the grading permit an alternate review process, which involves primarily the NRCS as far as providing technical information on doing various grading, or in some circumstances, depending on the type of grading, they actually go out and work directly and have oversight on the with the grower on the project. And there's probably been 20 or 25 of those projects that have gone through in the inland portion of the county, obviously, and it seems to be pretty effective for addressing some of these issues that there's concerns about. The other thing that hasn't been mentioned is there are ag policies in the ag and open space element that are specific towards protecting riparian habitat, protecting wildlife corridors, protecting ecosystems, and even for protecting visual impacts. And so there are policy statements that encourage agricultural people and agricultural growers to protect those sort of issues. So we do have policy statements that are more on the education and voluntary basis to address this. And so that's it for now.
I'd like to follow up on something that Robert said. In the original development of the county's grading ordinance, in working with agriculturalists, the concern that we have about a permit process for intensification of agriculture is primarily that if that was to occur within the county planning department, that we're not specialists in that. And we framed the county's grading ordinance on the basis that there are some experts out there that know a whole lot more than we do in the Ag Commissioner's Office, in NRCS and Soil Conservation Service folks and Resource Conservation District. And we wrote that approach really to be oriented to saying, let's get the agriculturalists out there with the experts and let's get them on the land. If you ask for a planner to come out to your land, we don't know ag practices. And we know grading practices that relate to urban development. And it would really require us to create an entirely new program when there are specialists and that's their training, and we would be using their best management practices. And that's really why we created the nature of that program, and that's likely to be the recommendation that we make to the Board of Supervisors, that there are educational programs and there are programs that are oriented at getting the specialists who really have the training and expertise working with the agriculturalists to make a difference when practices are undertaken, rather than bringing the planners or coastal planners out to look at issues.
Can I ask a clarification? The ag and open space element has come up a couple times now, and that's not incorporated, and that's not part of the LCP. There may be policies that you mentioned that are different or are more comprehensive than what is currently in the LCP.
It is a countywide document, and I made a note here at the beginning of the meeting to send a copy to you just so you would be aware of the program that the county had adopted, and it's geared in a wide range of topics for agricultural use. And Robert, you may want to touch base in terms of the specific policies in there. It recommends changes to minimum parcel size that are under consideration that would affect in the coastal zone. It establishes programs for standards for different types of agricultural uses like wineries and special activities, and we're in the process of developing ordinances. So some of them may translate into amendments to the coastal program or amendments to the ordinances to implement it. And those would be coming to you.
Okay. Yeah, I think we should move on to the third category, which is basically
right.
the protection of agricultural
The ag and open space element, due to political will, is flawed, and your program is far stronger than it is. And I'd like to just bring out a couple of points. The first one is the lot line adjustment. That is how ag land is split in our area, and it was pulled from the ag and open space at the end. It is something you're going to have to be tough-skinned, but you're going to have to recognize that is a problem that needs to be dealt with. The second problem is that county staff and the Ag Department supported a 40-acre minimum for Class 1 and 2 soils that were irrigated. And it was changed to politics again, down to 20 acres, and without any meeting of any viability whatsoever, showing, you know, maybe $10,000 profit or whatever. There aren't any restrictions right now. Those are two areas that I think that the commission really needs to look into, to if you're really interested in solving the problems in agriculture. Another thing is, and I think Eric brought it up pretty well, is that we don't want, you know, real estate speculation masquerading as agriculture, going down to these small parcels of lands that are not viable. They don't want viable reports because they're not viable. If they wouldn't be afraid of them otherwise. And the problem is they're the same people that come in later and say, well, gee, I can't make it on 10 acres. Can I please now split down to something smaller? So viable parcel size is really a problem in this county that needs to be addressed. Thank you.
Take up the lot line adjustment issue, because I think it is really important. I want to applaud the recommendation that even before lot line adjustment, that any that the certificates of compliance not be issued without reports generated that will be submitted to the Coastal Commission. I think that would be very helpful. But apart from that, there's this whole issue of lot line adjustment. I think viability is great. Doing a viability report is great. But at the end of the day, you can still subdivide a viable land. I mean, you've made sure that if they wanted to stay in agriculture, it would be viable, but you haven't made sure that they really want to keep that land in agriculture. There is a comment. You have your recommendations. There's this recommendation 5-4, and there's a sentence here that's very suggestive. It says, evaluate original purpose of parcels and the applicant's economic backed expectations. It's kind of a throwaway. It appears in the middle there. I haven't been in this county very long, but I've already seen a couple of lot line adjustment applications where it's not clear what that it's for. It's not clear what the applicant's economic backed expectations are. And as such, because with the county itself being in the dark, they feel like they, at this point, given the regulatory and legal framework, they feel like they just have to go ahead and do it if it does meet their minimum parcel size requirement for agriculture. I think it would be a good idea to strengthen this idea of keeping in mind the economic-backed expectations of the applicants and build that as a condition of lot line adjustment in the coastal zone. In other words, get some kind of guarantee from the people who come and want a lot line adjust. What is this for? What is this project for? Why lot line adjust in a vacuum? No one just wants to go through the motions. There must be a reason. Let's get that on the table, and let's get some commitment, not forever, but let's get some commitment that if this is really supposed to be viable agricultural land, that it'll stay that way for a while. So I think that is really, lot line adjustment would be an issue that I think the county will have to deal with on the rest of the, with an ordinance or something. But this is what you can do. And I think the idea of viability study is a great one. I don't know how easy or difficult it is to get them. But I think that is a great one. There's another issue regarding these the possible agricultural uses that the land could be put to. And there's a pretty long list of what the county considers agricultural. This is the Table O issue. You guys recommend that they reevaluate that and consider what are truly agricultural. I think it would be a really good idea if you gave some idea of what the commission considers to be acceptable agricultural uses. Don't just throw it out there. I think, you know, maybe they'll agree, maybe not, but I think it would be a good idea to get that stricter language or tighten that up. Finally, there's a suggestion here regarding water studies and ensuring that the uses of water
are monitored and that there's no conflicts between urban and agriculture. There are conflicts in microcosms in different areas that where ag and developments, other developments, have to rely on the same water source. And there, I mean, intensification requires additional waters. I don't think there's sufficient emphasis on this point. One of the ways that you can lose agriculture is if the water that is required for these new and viable uses is not there when they need it. So just like land is up for grab, different people want it for different purposes, the same is true of water. It seems like there's a little bit of a short shrift given to the water issue at the, you know, and complete emphasis on land. I think land is important, but as is water. So instead of just this vague recommendation that monitor water uses and the different, the conflicting purposes, have some policy statement about what you think is the important use for water in ag zone and how the water should be divided. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comments on the third issue area, agricultural protection, lot line adjustments, non-agricultural uses, and managing those processes?
Yes, Joy Fitzy, Farm Bureau again. One of the problems when they start talking about Table O and changing Table O, I think we need to go back to the allowable uses on ag land. Many of us in agriculture, there are accessory uses in ag. They may not be strictly grazing or farming or something, but they keep us in business. They don't impact the agricultural operation, but they may augment the agricultural income. In some cases, it may be agritourism, which means you have a bunkhouse, and we have a successful one going on, especially in East County, where they invite two or three people to come stay at their place and be part of the agricultural operation for a few days. I have heard people say, well, that shouldn't be allowed because that's not true agriculture. I think what you – God bless you, Pat. I think you have to take a real good look before you start coming down and trimming out things in Table O. Again, we are not corporate agriculture in San Luis County. Monday night when you saw the people get up from agriculture that testified, 99% of those people had somebody in the family either today or in the history of the family has had to work out, one or both of them had to work out to support their agricultural land. And that's part of the problem with a viability study. My father worked out for many, many years to help get his ranch, our ranch, which belonged to my grandparents. But he still, when he inherited it, he had to work out to help put that ranch on its feet. My brother and I both work out because we want to keep the ranch. So when you talk about a viability study and saying, how are you going to make it viable? I don't know how you're going to create this yardstick, because many of us are dedicated to keeping our land, dedicated to keeping it ranching or orchards or whatever. And your viability study is going to say we're not agriculture, because even the IRS in many cases don't believe we're agriculture. But we're there, and we are providing as a secondary benefit that open space that you so cherish. Now, that's not the primary reason. You remember on Monday night I said when you start putting priority on view shed over the production of food and fiber, we've got a social problem. But remember, when you start digging into us with viability studies and cutting Table O, you may be putting us out of business. Thank you.
My name is Irv McMillan. I was hoping that maybe we could hear a little more about the breakdown of agricultural parcels. It maybe it's just the bona fide farmers are here tonight. But the lot line adjustment is a critical issue. And along with the Williamson Act, the lot line adjustment and the Williamson Act together actually allows us to break down our parcels further than if there were no Williamson Act. And so I certainly congratulate you for taking a close look at it. As stated earlier, the county has refused to address the shortcomings of the ordinance governing lot line adjustments. And hopefully this the Coastal Commission and the LCP will encourage them to take a closer look at that. You know, I agree with most of the farmers here that it really, the government shouldn't be telling people what they can grow. But at the same time, I think when you have critical habitat, it's important that when you do intensify your crops, that you take into consideration those critical habitats. And certainly our riparian areas are the most critical of all our habitats. And being a cowman myself, I know what livestock does in the riparian area. And we really have to work on trying to protect the riparian areas, not only their edges from erosion, but the riparian self from hoof action. Thank you.
Walter Fitchew. I got one question. In your report, you mentioned permits to graze cattle. Grazing permits. I don't remember what page it's on, but I saw it. I would like this explained, please.
Yeah, it may be. I don't know the reference. I don't think we make any recommendations about requiring permits for grazing.
My name is Herman Schwartz. Should I assume that before you prepared this document or during that process that you submitted a copy to Secretary of Agriculture Bill Lyons for their department to scrutinize it? Because if on one hand you're talking about maintaining the viability of agriculture, which may or may not be the case, and on the other hand it looks like you're trying to throttle agriculture and almost destroy agriculture, if you haven't sent it to Bill Lyons, then I think it should go there for their input into your final decision.
Yeah, unfortunately, we weren't able to circulate a draft well in advance of the commission's hearing that was scheduled in San Luis Obispo County. So that's one of the reasons, as I mentioned at the outset, of having these meetings and beginning that process of feedback.
If you send a letter to somebody and you refer to their name in a letter, general protocol is that you copy people whose name you've used in the letter at the bottom so they get a copy. So that's why I assume that you had sent it to Secretary of Agriculture Lyons so you could get their input in advance. And so you're telling me you haven't, so I think it's important that we get it to Secretary Lyons.
I'm not certain that it wasn't sent to the Secretary, but I can check that for you. The staff report, the report itself was sent out to a large mailing list prior to the commission's hearing.
Hi, good evening. My name is Jim Campbell. A couple of questions this evening. The publication I picked up when I came in, is this a compilation of?
That's a listing of all the recommendations that specifically address agriculture or from other chapters that raise agricultural issues.
Okay.
We have other handouts with the rest of the recommendations, and I haven't mentioned it, but if people have comments about things that are non-agricultural, we can certainly try to address those at the end, towards the end of the meeting, if people would like to.
Okay. Maybe you can clarify some of these for me this evening or get back with me. On page 5 of this document, preliminary recommendation 5.4 mentions in sentence number 1, develop a new LCP to address development in agricultural areas. What's your definition of agricultural areas? Is that specific to land use designations or ag viability? Or, in other words, does that include land that's zoned for ag as well as rural lands?
Generally agricultural lands, zoned agricultural.
Zoned agricultural. Will that be spelled out in the document somewhere as to a definition of that? In other words, it doesn't apply to rural lands, what you're saying.
Yeah, I think we can clarify that in the final document, but our intent was to address development on agriculturally zoned lands.
Okay.
There are some recommendations, particularly concerning urban-rural boundary stable stabilization issues like around Cambria where rural lands might be specifically addressed.
So this would only apply to agricultural zone lands within the coastal zone. It would not apply to any other land use designations. Is that correct?
Well, I think that was our intent, but we haven't reached that level of specificity with the actual recommendation.
And when would you be doing that? And how would you – what document would you put that in?
There'll be a final recommendation, set of recommendations being brought to the commission sometime this summer, June or July, probably.
Okay. But the intent is that it applies to agricultural zone lands and not other properties. Okay. Down further in this particular recommendation, this was brought up earlier by Mr. Pereira, you address the issue of access roads, building envelopes, square footage limitations. Where did that come from? And how does that apply to what you're trying to accomplish here?
It's not a straightforward answer. It's, the recommendations are being geared towards a trend that is occurring in terms of the lot line adjustments on agricultural lands that are not necessarily intended to promote agricultural land uses, but rather are the first step in a process of rural residential developments coming into agricultural areas that may be putting pressure on agricultural land uses to no longer stay that way. So, there are various steps in that land use process, including, incremental conversion of or lot line adjustment, conversion of an agricultural road to a less agricultural road, to adjustment of lots to facilitate residential home sites, to the building of the homes themselves, and then with the ultimate outcome perhaps being loss of a large, for example, grazing parcel where there's no longer enough space to have a grazing operation. So all of those ideas are kind of coupled with that problem identification.
You mentioned in here that assuring that lot line adjustments maintain and enhance ag viability. If you refer to page 6 and 7 under 5-10 and 5-11, in 5-4 you're discussing, you mentioned, enhancing ag viability, which I think is it's if that's what this is all about, I'm all for that. But when we flip over to the next page and look at 5-10 and 5-11, I read on and say that you're recommending that you amend the LCP to require permit review if intensification of ag land results from grading, native vegetation removal, et cetera, even an increase in water needs. So if the goal is to enhance ag viability, how does 5-10 dovetail with 5-4? I mean, on the one hand, you would like to promote policies and ordinances to enhance ag viability. But when I flip the, and this is my first read of this, so then I read on 5-10 and 5-11 that there's going to be a permit review process that is going to potentially limit the production of ag lands, not enhance it. And in 5-11, we're going to go on and avoid and mitigate ag development impacts. Just some food for thought. That I'm not sure exactly, I've only read this for about 45 minutes, so I'm not sure exactly where this all started, where it's coming from, or where it's going, but you might want to sit down and put together some type of a matrix and what one recommendation is all about, and then compare that to the result on another matrix, because it looks to me like there's a pretty direct conflict between 5-4 and 5-10 and 5-11, but we'll go on. 5-12, it mentions in one part the monitoring of water withdrawals. Does that a precursor to future metering of wells, or what's your definition of monitoring of water withdrawals? That's on page 7, 5-12. So it's existing LCP policies that require protection of groundwater basins, protection of riparian habitat, and monitoring of water withdrawals are underutilized by the county. I guess what I'm saying is that there seems to be just the number of conflicts within what it is you have in these documents. And we can go on and read on about 2.4, which says reduce development potential on urban edges, but we don't want to do lot line adjustments, but we also don't want to impact critical view shed, but then we don't want ag on anything over 30%. We don't want to have extra water usage, but we want to enhance ag viability. I'm not sure how all that works together. Thank you.
Thank you. It's about 5 minutes to nine. Are there quite a few people left that would like to make comments? Can I get a show of hands of how many comments might be remaining? Okay, we need to wrap up, so if you could limit it yourself to 2 minutes, that would be great.
This time I'll honor the two-minute rule. I'll be the closing act. The first thing I'd like to do is, again, this whole issue about, that was just talked about by Joy and several people about non-agricultural uses inside of your operation. I could read this chapter and verse right out of our state policy and directives, and it speaks right to this. Again, if you would have talked to us, that's a broken record, you would have found out. On page 237, again, you know, getting facts correct would be helpful for everything here. There's a sentence in here that refers to the large killer cows that chase away the deer and the mountain lions. Come on, come on. Get out of the fairy tale zone. Get real. Don't even put that kind of stuff in there. That's embarrassing for both parties involved. The real important thing here is, you know, because most of the killer cows really are gone now. They're vegetarians. They don't eat deer or mountain lions. So, you know, that was just an anomaly. It just happened one day. You make this assumption at the end, a preliminary recommendation on 513, protection of rural grazing landscapes. And one of your biggest concerns is the scenic vista concept. I want to remind you of something. Agriculture is an outdoor industry, okay? We operate outdoors, and we allow people to look and enjoy what we're doing, and we're proud of it. But we're not creating viewshed for anyone. We produce food and fiber. The same vista for this type of a agricultural bovine combination intensified, which you want intensified, is called Harris Feedlot. And I think you probably have some problems with that. I don't know. I think it's wonderful. So understand that if you don't have any agricultural experience here, you're trying to do several things that was just alluded to. You know, it doesn't make sense. We do not produce scenic vistas. We produce food and fiber. We're proud of how our operation looks. It's an outdoor operation, and it's exposed to everyone. We'll do our best to make it look good, but please don't think we are in charge of your view shed. We aren't, okay, but we'll take a good job at it, okay? We've done a great job for all these years. The real question you got to ask yourself, whatever you create here, there's going to be so many costs in this. The timeline, you guys aren't known for your streamlined activity, okay, like the plans that are coming out any month now, any year now. When you want to change crops, you need a permit process. I lost out on a Korean export of dairy heifers because of some bureaucratic changes at the last minute. And that was 250 heifers that were exported to Korea that never got to go there, and they ended up going to Chino, and it was not the great event that it should have been, but it was called bureaucracy. Okay, so when we want to do something, we need assistance, not more red tape. I don't know how this is going to be monitored, how this is going to be enforced. This is just a serious cost burden. What we're talking about now is more state employees, more state overload, monitoring and enforcing the Great Coastal Zone ordinance. I mean, it's just, I don't see the application for it there that makes sense.
Thank you. A couple more comments. I see.
Joy Fitzy Farm Bureau again. Last two comments. One of the main things I think you need to look at is you list agriculture as development. I think if you've read my comments previously, you realize this. Let me give you an example of how that reads to those of us. If you look at Preliminary Recommendation 8.1, that PR would preclude any new development visible from public viewing areas in those areas designated as critical view sheds. You put in there, that includes all the North Coast rural areas. Now, unless you separate agriculture from, quote, development, which it's listed in 5, 10, 11, and 12, because you have to get a coastal development permit. That means it's development.
You have got to change that. It's imperative. Can you imagine now any place in the North Coast other than San Simeon and Cambria you couldn't change from grazing to crops because you're a development? I think that is very, very critical. That needs to be changed. My last comment, please, I would like to meet with you with some of the ag people, and we sit down and talk about this and come up with some other thoughts. And here's some of our comments from our Farm Bureau president.
My name is Dave Crowther. I'm a farmer and rancher in the Cambria area, and I'm here as the chairman of the Cambria San Simeon Cayucas Farm Center. And I'd like to say that San Luis Obispo County agriculturists in general agree that our ag commissioner's office is doing a rather complete job of regulating coastline agriculture. And I don't see any good reason for tampering with a system that seems to be working well enough. I think that in a perfect world, my definition of a perfect world at least, I would expect the commission to simply delete all of the references in the review that are specifically directed at regulating and or dictating the cultural practices of farmers and ranchers. Failing in this, the next best and I would say much less attractive option is to take the currently unrealistic ag proposals and modify them to a point where they become something that the ag community can hope to live with. And to this end, I would like to commend the commission and the commission staff for a willingness to discuss these issues with farmers and ranchers. The farm and ranch visits that are presently underway will be especially helpful, I think, as we work to bring about a better understanding of proper agricultural practices. And I must say that I am sincerely grateful for the willingness of the commission staff to listen and learn. And hopefully this objective attitude will lead us to a final finished review that serves the best interests of all concerned. Thank you.
Thank you. One more comment?
I'll make this brief. I just have one comment on preliminary recommendation 511. Number one, my name's Charlie Kidd. I develop vineyards around the county, including in the coastal zone. And this would limit new or expanding crop productions to slopes less than 30%. I don't think that we should add specific numbers into this document because there are appropriate managed techniques for specific crops that are very viable on slopes greater than 30%. For instance, dry-farmed grapes, dry-farmed almonds, which are both very historically grown crops in this county. So just the addition of specific numbers like this may not be viable or may not be appropriate for all instances.
Thank you. I would like to go back to the Ag Commissioner for a final comment.
How long you want to go on? No. I won't go on too long. I'm going to respond to some of the comments that were made and then cover a few things in this section, which are recommendations 5.1 through 5.9. There was mention of the ag and open space element and the 40-acre minimum parcel size and the lot line adjustment policy being withdrawn. And in both of those cases, we were in support. We were in support of the 40-acre minimum and the lot line adjustment policy. With respect to lot line adjustments, I look at a lot of lot line adjustments, actually not too many in the coastal zone, but and they kind of fall into two categories. We do see minor lot line adjustments. Maybe we're talking about two or three parcels where they align the property to better match a fence line or a road or some sort of cropping pattern. And I would hope that, you know, the ideas you have for lot line adjustments wouldn't really say apply in that sort of situation, because those are pretty clear cut. You know, they're for ag purposes, and they benefit the ag operations. We do see lot line adjustments that really you could categorize them as re-subdivisions, a lot of parcels, and major realignment of the lines. And I think some of the suggestions you have in your recommendations to address that would be beneficial. And I went back and I looked at what was recommended for approval for the lot line adjustment policy, and some of those recommendations are the same thing, especially like consideration of clustering for smaller parcels and leaving larger parcels, and taking in consideration access and how that would affect ag, and then residential uses that might result, how that would affect ag. So I don't think we necessarily agree with all of those, but a lot of those I think would be beneficial. There was reference to water use. So I would want to mention that there are a couple ag and open space policies that address that. There's an Ag Policy 11, which encourages agricultural operations to conserve water. And actually, we have seen a trend, and it has been in the coastal zone primarily, of like in vegetable crop operation, to go to irrigation tapes, strips or drip sort of irrigation that's even more efficient than sprinkler, which is more efficient than row crop furrow irrigation. And then there's also Ag Policy 12, which is a pretty strong policy statement that indicates that groundwater resources need to be available for agricultural operations. Concerning the recommendations, just a few statements. There are three recommendations on the ag viability. We did have Mary Bianchi, who's a UC Cooperative Extension viticulturalist, look at that, and she's prepared some written comments about that, and she does have some expertise in ag viability. There's part of the recommendation three has quite a list of things to include in ag viability, and I think the scope of that's probably too broad, especially for smaller type of projects. And there seems to be kind of a co-mingling of ag viability, looking at specifically what's going on in ag property versus a public cost-benefit analysis or a larger area cost-benefit analysis, which may be important for a general plan amendment. But I don't think specific to an ag-related project that's really tied to that. So I think those ought to be separated out. There is a, and no one's mentioned that tonight, but there is a recommendation, or I guess a consideration for a merger ordinance, which we would see is could be quite problematic. It doesn't seem to have much of an incentive, and I think it could potentially have negative consequences with larger holdings being reconveyed to family members or other people. So that's something to take a look at. There have been a couple recommendations along building envelopes. That was mentioned tonight about square footage on houses or building envelopes. And the one thing that we've talked about a little bit in planning department is maybe to address that concern with having so much residential development on an ag parcel, is maybe look at the Williamson Act program and what the assessor's office uses when they exclude, for Williamson Act projects, they exclude the building envelope, the home site, and they typically use like a half acre or 1 acre sort of criteria. So that might be helpful to address that issue, and it's already sort of an established procedure. I think that's probably it, so I didn't go on too long.
Thank you. Any further comments from the Ag Liaison?
I think you've heard tonight that about the ag and open space element, and I'd really encourage you to look at that more closely and see how it might apply. I know when we were going through that process that we were discouraged from major and minor clusters in the coastal area, and certainly it seems to me like much of the discussion that we've had here and many of the comments have related to how you handle parcels that are in the rural areas and agricultural areas, and how you handle the potential for development. And I think that maybe looking at that document and perhaps taking that into consideration would solve both issues on both sides. I also think that you should look at the Williamson Act material and the document as it relates to the parcel sizes. I think that that would clarify perhaps your understanding and some of the comments that were made here this evening. Those are the only comments I have.
Pat?
We're going to be bringing this overall review of the periodic review that the Coastal Commission has performed to the Board of Supervisors. Our tentative date is May 1st in order for the board's comments to be forwarded to the commission by the deadline that they've established of May 4th. So keep your eyes out in the paper. We have time booked at the board and envision that they'll set a significant period of time to allow public comments.
We would like to thank all of you for coming out tonight. I know that I've learned a lot, and I think my colleagues have learned a lot as well. I've already spoken with some of you about further meetings, either in the field or related to specific issues, and we would definitely be interested in doing that in the time available, so that we can maximize our ability to bring forward recommendations that make sense for as many people as we can. I would like to mention that, again, written comments are great. If you can find the time to write things up and more specific ideas that you have, we'd love to see those. We also have an email address that you can send your comments to, and that address is slowreview, that's just San Luis Obispo, S-L-O, review, one word, at coastal.ca.gov. And with that, I'd like to close the meeting. Thank you very much.